To Juliet, a library was more than just a repository for books. It was a spiritual and intellectual adventure, a place to delve into the rich treasure trove of life. When she had first stepped into her village library in Upper Beeding as an intrepid 6-year-old, she was struck by the sheer quantity of books, the endless escapes into different places, different families, different lives. The library made her small village feel expansive, her imagination unrestrained. Reading really and books really provided people with a great way to spend their time, to stop themselves from worrying, to escape into a different world. These jobs, they instead of looking at women and saying, "Oh, we couldn't possibly hire a woman for that role," I think through the war they became more and more, well, we will, we will, we will. And the more that the women did it, the more they proved that they could.
Hello, and welcome to History Through Fiction, the podcast. I'm your host, Colin Mustful, and today I am thrilled to be joined by Jennifer Ryan, author of the novel The Underground Library.
Historical fiction, what you're trying to do is to bring it back to life.
Jennifer Ryan, a former book editor for The Economist and the BBC, is now a renowned author with bestsellers like The Chilbury Ladies Choir. Her work has appeared in various publications, and she draws inspiration from her grandmother's World War II stories. After studying fiction at Johns Hopkins University, she wrote her acclaimed debut novel. Jennifer lives in Northern Virginia with her family, continuing to write novels influenced by history. Today, I'll be talking with Jennifer about her newest novel, The Underground Library. I'd like to start with your characters, specifically Juliet and Katie. Can you talk about who they are and the circumstances of their lives in this novel?
So Juliet comes from a small library in a village, and she's got this wonderful opportunity to work in London, to be a deputy head librarian. This is very unusual at the time for women, and she broke a lot of molds by doing this. So the war gave women new opportunities, and she was one of the people to take advantage of this. She was desperate to get out of her little village and out of her parents' home, and very excited about this new opportunity, was absolutely determined to do it well. So she was quite disappointed to find out that the library might be closing down, and especially after it's bombed. She wasn't expecting to find very much in London as far as community and, you know, and everything, and was quite surprised by the wealth of what was going on in the library, and soon gathered the ladies together into form a book club. And that really forms the core of this book, and how they help the women in all sorts of situations to overcome a lot of the issues that they have. The other main character is Katie, and she is very young and has just left school and is waiting to go to university. And then she has this huge family drama that I'm not going to go into because it's a bit of a spoiler. But it basically means that she really has to reshuffle the way she sees life and the way that she sees everything. Her boyfriend, who she wants to marry at some point, is at war. He's gone to the front line, and without him, she feels really quite dislodged, and they share this passion for knowledge and learning and education. And the library is the place that she longs to be. The third character is Sophie, and she is a Jewish refugee from Germany, and she came over at the beginning of the war in order to work in a as a maid in a old man's house, and she used the domestic service visa in order to get the job. She's very last and badly treated by this old man as well, and the library becomes her haven.
One reason I wanted to start with the characters is because you write, I feel as if something is coming to life under my fingertips, that I'm carefully creating a world, characters who will act and think and feel emotions all by themselves. Can you talk about what that means to you and how you bring these characters to life?
I feel that they're living people who come to life as I'm writing it. I can very quickly conjure up a type of person. I don't know whether this is what a lot of other authors do, but I seem to just latch on to someone in my mind. And it's not a person, obviously, who I've ever known, because people are very different now than they were in the Second World War or in different historical ages. But it's it all comes from an awful lot of research, reading personal stories and letters and diaries. There's a lot of diaries from the Second World War. And you can really get into the idea of how people thought and felt in those days and how specific women particularly understood their role in society and within the war, and how the war had really changed everything about where they were as people.
So you talked a little bit about the importance of the underground library, but can you give us a little more history? What was the underground library?
So the Bethnal Green Library in East London, it was this big old Victorian building, a very big, prominent library, and it was bombed in pretty much the first couple of weeks of the Blitz. It was very badly bombed, the roof collapsed, and it's based on a true story that the all the books were rescued from the library and taken down. And one of the librarians had this idea to take the library down into the underground station nearby where people were sheltering from the bombs. And in this way, it could still carry on to be a library, helping the community get through the Blitz.
I'm an American. I've never been to London. Can you tell us a little bit about the geography of the city, where it was located, and maybe like the tunnel or system at that time and how that all worked?
So Bethnal Green is just east of the city of London. So it's quite a built up area. During at the beginning of the Second World War, it would have been like an inner city suburb. That's how I would describe it. That term would not have been used at the time, but that's how it was. It was there was a lot of tenements there. It was quite a poor area, although it did have more wealthier areas, such as around the park, where you see these nice big houses. So the underground system was just at the time being developed out into East London and out to, you know, the further out suburbs. And it was on the central line, which is quite a deep line as well. So, and that meant that it was far enough underground for them to be completely out of the way of the bombs.
Your stories are inspired by the stories of your grandmother. Can you tell us about your grandmother and how she's inspired you to write these stories?
My grandmother was 20 years old at the start of the Second World War. She was, like many women of her era, she was taken up by the dances, the sudden recklessness, the freedom, and the new opportunities that the war brought. I think it was a while into the war when some of the tragedies started coming through. And even then, everyone really made an effort to downplay them and to tell funny stories to keep everyone's spirits up. And I think that This is why she had so many funny stories about the war, was because she was continually, everyone of that era was ready to, with their nice funny stories to cheer everyone up. She never actually went through any personal tragedies. All her family got through the war fine. And where she was living on the outskirts of London never really got bombed either, which was very lucky. She didn't get evacuated, even by the end of the war when she started having children. But she had always a proliferation of great stories.
Can you talk about taking those stories and using your craft of historical fiction to transform them for readers so that you have a compelling narrative based in history with also elements of your family history as well?
So I think most of my books come from my research. They come from an idea that I've got through one of my research. So either a book that I've read, something that someone's told me. I've talked to quite a few old ladies, particularly about their experiences of the war, and I get an awful lot of ideas from them, and I get a lot of insight into that mindset from the war as well. I think, you know, what I'd like to write about in the war is women's role and their role in society and how it really made them feel differently, because suddenly they were needed to do very serious work, whereas in the past, before the war, they were really just allowed to do kind of secretarial work, administrative work, kind of much more shop work, that kind of thing. And it wasn't until the war when suddenly they were needed, like the country needed them to really step up. And so they had to do it. And they found, a lot of women found, that they were very able to do it as well. And the rest of society saw that as well. And I think that it really made a big impact on women stepping forward and being able to make a big stand for their case to be more seen in society. So that's one of the big elements that comes to me when I'm starting to write a new book. But also it comes together with all the other things that I've ever read. And, you know, you just have all these connections in your mind that all happen at the same time. You know, very often when I'll read something, I'll think, oh, yes, that links with this or the other that I've also read. And all these different stories come together and all these different personalities and characters that I've read about or read letters or diaries from or heard about through my interviews, they all come together. With also my stories about my grandmother as well. So it basically all comes together. I think historical fiction, what you're trying to do is to bring it back to life. I think it adds this other dimension into reading and writing a book that is time. So you've got the story and the narrative and the characters and what they're going through or what they're trying to say, what the book is essentially trying to say. And then on top of that, you've got this layer of history, which provides an insight into a different era and how far we've gotten now since then. And obviously how far it's come in order to get to where it was.
And of course, this novel is also about the value of books and the importance they played during a very dark time in English history and world history. Can you talk about this immense value that the library provided and the sacrifices people made in order to keep the library going because of that value and that importance?
I think the book touches on this quite a lot is the sense that during the war, particularly when you're in the underground shelter, there's a bunch of feelings that you're feeling. You're feeling worried about what's happening outside, that you are, you know, what are you going to find? Are you going to find out that your house is bombed at the end of the night? Are you going to find that all your belongings have got up in flames? Are you going to find that, you know, maybe one of your loved ones who was left up there has been killed or injured? And also, you're worried about people on the front line, you're worried about all sorts of things. So worry is like the main thing. But you're also very bored. There's not a lot to do in the underground. And people spent a lot of evenings there. And quite often, reading was, you know, was the best pastime for some of these opportunities. So reading really and books really provided people with a great way to spend their time, to stop themselves from worrying, to escape into a different world. But it was also educational as well. A lot of people used books during the war in order to learn how to sew better, learn how to knit, learn how to cook with food rations, learn more about the history of the political situation in Europe, find an atlas to see the maps, to see what was going on in all these different places that they talked about on the news. So there was a great need and use for a library that probably wouldn't have been there before. But also I think this is what the book touches on a lot, is the social part of reading, which is that people come together to talk about books by handing books around. If you have there's nothing quite like when you have a book that you love, giving it to somebody else, you know, handing it to someone and saying, oh, I think you'll love this one. It really transported me. And then being able to talk to them afterwards. And this is the beauty of a book club, but also libraries and bookstores and everywhere where books are involved. People come together and they talk about books. They talk about their favorite books. They talk about why they love them.
And I suppose they didn't have the internet to keep them connected.
Yes, no, exactly, exactly.
You came to fiction from nonfiction as a nonfiction book editor. Can you talk about your experience and what you learned as a nonfiction editor and how you're able to kind of use that as you worked your way into fiction?
So as a nonfiction book editor, you learn how to write because quite often the authors of nonfiction books are specialists in their own subject. So they don't necessarily know how to write very well. For example, I worked for a couple of years doing health books, editing health books, and I had to rewrite an awful lot of them because they were written not to by medical experts and by doctors who wouldn't necessarily know how to make something very readable and follow a kind of nonfiction narrative structure. So that's very much kind of where I began to write in a big way. And then I moved up into more of an executive position. And that was very interesting, just seeing, you know, how it all fits together in publishing. So I always wanted to write fiction. I think from when I started writing, working in publishing and I always dabbled in it, but it wasn't until I took a break from work in order to have children that I decided to do a postgraduate degree in fiction writing in order to find out more about it. And it all just went on from there.
And moving on from there, what were some of the obstacles? What were some of the challenges and disillusionments? Did you go through a query process, a rejection process? Maybe a manuscript that's left in your drawer that's unpublished. What was the learning curve like for you?
Well, I think that by that point, I'd had quite a few manuscripts that were half finished. That was my big problem, is that I never finished anything. So I was determined when I started the program that I was going to work on a single manuscript and I was going to finish it. And that was the Chilbury Ladies Choir. So I was quite lucky, it won a competition. And then I had to see if I could get an agent quite quickly because it was going to be published as a result of the contest. And it was quickly picked up by Crown. Yeah, so. Which is part of Random House. I've now moved to Ballantine. My editor was moved to Ballantine. So we've all moved there.
Well, that's great. And I mean, I read that the Chilbury Ladies Choir became a national bestseller.
Yeah.
How rewarding was that for you?
Oh, it was amazing. I honestly, at the time, the whole thing was a bit of a whirlwind, and I couldn't quite believe that it was all happening, you know, that I was getting a book published, and then it very quickly became a national bestseller. It was great. Yeah.
And I want you maybe elaborate a little bit more on your love of books, because of course this novel centers around the value of books, and we talked about that a little bit. But you write how books can engage and entertain us, and also comfort and heal us. Can you talk about your love of books and why you think it's important to share that love and that passion through a novel like The Underground Library?
So first of all, I think I really enjoyed writing about books. I think it's something I truly love. I love the escape and the entering into a different world, but also I love what it is that they teach you and the lessons that you pick up out of them, the points that they're making. And I think that was one of the first reasons why I really wanted to write myself, was to be able to do that myself. And I think that's really where I love talking about books as well as writing them. I just think it's so wonderful that they can provide so many different things. But I belong to a number of book clubs myself. I belong to two different book clubs, and I love getting together and discussing books. I think, and I think most people would agree with me, most book clubs would agree with me here, that when I say that when you talk about books, it lifts the conversation out of the everyday and makes it about something that's more complicated, about human nature and about, or about history, or about the world that we live in some way. And I think that that's very inspiring.
What have been some of your favorite reads lately?
I recently read The Humans by Matt Haig. And that is, it's quite a philosophical novel, but quite easy to get through as well. But very thought-provoking.
Well, finally, I just want to ask you about writing World War II history, because it's an incredibly popular genre that continues to churn out more titles. Why do you think that is, and what is the importance of continuing to highlight stories within that took place within World War II?
I thought it was, it's an extraordinary point in time, because first of all, it's not actually that long ago. I mean, it's frighteningly close to us, but honestly, I have to say the Nazis and Hitler were just an extraordinary group of people with this incredible, quite complicated ideas about what the world should look like. I mean, to be honest with you, you couldn't get a better villain. I'm continually shocked by what they were doing behind the scenes in Germany, and they were using warfare in order to hide everything that they were doing. I think it's just extraordinary that they managed to convince the German population that they were, yes, they were fine, and this is, they were heading in the right direction. Absolutely incredible situation. I think that that is really helpful from a fiction point of view, because having a villain just so like that, it makes it very straightforward. Secondly, I think that war itself is, I think there was a sociologist who said that war is the biggest instigator of cultural change. And you really see that in the Second World War. I think in Britain, as well as in the States, you can really see, I think in Britain much more so. And I think that the role of women didn't really get such a big thrust forward until the Second World War. I think that because the need for workers and people to really step up, to become women, to become engineers, to become doctors, to become higher up managers and mathematicians and everything. And I think that all of these jobs, they, instead of looking at women and saying, oh, we couldn't possibly hire a woman for that role, I think through the war, they became more and more, well, we will, we will, we will. And the more that the women did it, the more they proved that they could.
And what are you working on next?
I'm actually working on a book that is set in the 1950s. So it's different from the 1940s and the Second World War, but it provides an awful lot of insight into what happens to women after the war, how they go back to being housewives, but also how the world is a different place and there are opportunities coming along for them as well.
Well, Jennifer, congratulations on the Underground Library, and thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now I lost my train of thought. Let's see.